According to the CDC, 1 in 68 children in the U.S. have a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. I don't have a statistic for the number of parents facing this lifelong challenge, but there are a lot of us. And with a statistic like 1 in 68 children, chances are we're sitting in your congregation, or we'd like to be, if only our child could keep it together for an entire service. I think every church should have Ellen Notbaum's book, 10 Things Your Student with Autism Wishes You Knew, available for children's department Sunday school teachers. It's a helpful tool packed with teaching tips that work with all sorts of children. Her other book, 10 Things Every Child with Autism Wishes You Knew, is a great resource for helping everyone understand what life is like for children on the autism spectrum. But what's it like to be the parent of a child with a diagnosis on the autism spectrum? For a number of years, I've been trying to find a way to describe my life. Sometimes I say, life is hard, or life is not for the timid, or people have no idea what my life is like, or this is the hardest thing I've ever done. All of which are true, but none of which translates into any kind of working metaphor to help you understand what life is like for a parent of a child who's not neurotypical. Recently, I picked up this word picture and I'm trying it on for size. Parenting a child on the autism spectrum is like doing life wearing a fully loaded backpack all the time. First thing every morning, I slip it on even before I get out of bed. That's kind of tricky. And it's the last thing I take off every night when I take my feet off the floor and collapse into the blissful oblivion of sleep. Many parents can't even do this. Some of our kids have serious sleep issues. I'm very fortunate. Occasionally, I wake up in the middle of the night and discover I'm still wearing it. My mind races in circles, trying to figure out how to negotiate an upcoming change with a child who finds change unbearable. My heart squeezes with sorrow over a conversation that went off track because of a deep misunderstanding and the emotional explosion when social cues were misread. Again. This backpack is not just part of my life, it's part of me. It's not just something I wear, it's strapped onto my soul. The pockets are constantly packed and repacked with long, comprehensive monologues about that one topic on which the boy is fixated, like volcanoes or soccer shoes or birth dates, or 3 foods that he'll eat, or those extra meds in case the activity lasts longer than expected. And somewhere in there, I keep hoping to find a translation aid as I help my child decode the world and help the world grasp my child's needs and strengths. Here's one little example of how the typical black and white thinking of autism can derail communication. Sometimes I'll frame a request this way. Do you mind bringing a chair from the schoolroom? He may simply answer, yes, but he doesn't get the chair. What he means is, yes, I would mind doing that job. I don't really want to know if he minds. I just want him to get the chair. This interaction times 1,000. And now that we've decoded this one, we laugh about it, but we haven't always laughed. Apparently, the backpack is also equipped with sirens and whistles hidden throughout the compartments. Alarms alert me 12 times a day of the anxiety flaring up in his heart, the panic and distress rocking his thinking as he battles an obsessive thought that won't be quiet. He's generally on high alert, like a plane load of GIs heading home from Afghanistan. Responses can rocket from 0 to 70 in no miles per hour, so usually the alarms are loud, but late. Emotional whiplash is common. Think about what you did today, just your normal day, and imagine that you did it all wearing the backpack I just described. How would it change the way you felt when you heard the first bird outside your window in the pre-dawn hours? Would you be able to quiet your soul long enough to initiate a morning quiet time? Imagine canning tomatoes for 4 hours in a sweltering kitchen wearing the backpack. What about doing that little extra project someone suggested you could easily manage, like taking a meal to a new family or babysitting a 3-year-old? Would you be able to think your own thoughts for a few minutes each day? Consider the challenge of a family road trip, complete with multiple restaurant stops, different beds every night, and long days of sightseeing while wearing the backpack. Want to host overnight guests for the weekend? Plan a backyard barbecue? teach a Sunday school class of energetic third graders? It's not that the backpack would make those tasks impossible, but it does make all the various bits a whole lot more challenging and exhausting. And as much as conditioning can help you never get completely accustomed to the backpack bumping along behind you, leaving bruises on your soul. Oh, and since you didn't pack it yourself, you don't know exactly what's in there, but wow, it's heavy. And some days the strangest bits fall out of the pockets. There are times when the backpack seems lighter, and I'm always grateful for those splashes of unexpected laughter, windows of clear communication after a heartbreaking misunderstanding, sincere requests for time together. The thing is, those days, or more accurately, those moments, aren't predictable. I never know when we'll have a good day, so I can't plan ahead very well. "We'll have to see how it's going" is a very common sentence at our house. When I very occasionally have a few kid-free days, he heads off for a canoe trip with the boys from church or a week of camp, I hardly know what to do with myself. And again, I feel very fortunate, as many parents never have this opportunity because their child's physically or developmentally unable to participate in these types of experiences. For the first few days, I feel like I've taken off the backpack and leaned it carefully against a sturdy tree. And as I take off my shoes and socks and sink wearily onto a bed of moss beside its tumbling stream, the sense of phew is almost indescribable. Let's just say it's body, soul, and spirit amazing. But as the week slips by, I feel a heaviness creep into my spirit, knowing that Friday is coming and I will again pick up the backpack. Resting is refreshing and life-giving and healing, and honestly, almost anything I do feels like rest when I'm not wearing the backpack. But it doesn't make the actual pack any lighter, and when it comes time to lean my shoulders against that tree and fling my arms through those straps, I know exactly what I'm doing. It's an exhausting choice I make every single day, one way or another, because I love this boy, and this is the choice I want and need to make to help him have the best life possible. And I'm not complaining about it. I'm just trying to face my own truth and make it accessible to you. Some days I wonder if I'll hold up over the long haul. I feel ready to buckle beneath the load. I have friends and acquaintances wearing similar backpacks, and we try to encourage each other and help, but for all the above reasons, it's hard. We could really use some help. We need you. But before I suggest what we need, there's a few things we don't need, those of us parenting through the daily challenges of life with a child who's on the autism spectrum. We don't need advice from people who have no idea what we're dealing with. If you haven't been a parent in this situation, we'll just ask you nicely this time to refrain from offering your strategy, your opinion, your celebrity Marvel remedy book, your insight, your DVD, or your internet link about a miracle cure from diet, essential oils, or food supplements. Our backpack is heavy enough. When you give us the stuff, we just have to toss it in the back of the sack and walk on with the heavier load, because we don't need judgment. I can't tell you how often I've heard comments about autism that went something like this. "Used to be there wasn't any such diagnosis as autism. We just called them spoiled brats." Really? And that one I heard in my own Sunday school class. Sometimes these remarks are accompanied by pronouncements against using meds to control children. What they really need is parenting. Again, really, you have no idea. We don't need sympathy. The phrase, "I could never do what you're doing," isn't helpful. It isn't even true. We can't do it either. But it is what God is asking of us, and so we lean heavily on His provision for the task. If He asked you to do this, you could not do it, and yet you would do it in the same way we are doing it, only by the grace and strength of God. So what do we need, we who are walking against the normal flow of parenting life, wearing our backpacks, parenting kids who hang along the far edges of the bell curve of typical? We could use some encouragement. If you see a speck of growth in our child, if you by chance catch them doing something good, something right, we desperately need to hear about it. "He's such a nice young man," the camp nurse commented as I picked up meds at the end of the week, letting me know he'd been polite and appropriate. You can be sure I passed those words along to my son, too. We're living this challenge 24/7, so it's possible we lose track of the progress our child is making. When you tell us what you see, we draw strength from those good words to carry us through another day, or at least another hour. And for all their quirks and issues, our kids do have strengths and gifts. Could you help us see those too? We would like a listening ear. Sometimes I just wish I could talk to someone about how hard this is without receiving advice or judgment. Just care, for God's sake, and for mine too. Occasionally, I'll put out a little feeler, a sentence about my struggle that tests the receptivity of someone with whom I'm conversing, and usually that little feeler gets snipped back to the root with a clueless comment like, "Oh, every parent has those days." Wait, your kid wore swim trunks to school every day for the first 3 weeks of the new school year, too? No, I didn't think so. Other times, the conversation freezes solid in the silence of, "I just don't know what to say." "Try this." "That must be hard," or "I had no idea," or just, accompanied by a kind smile. Recently, I tried to have a conversation with a woman I would consider a close friend. She wondered how a recent transition had gone, and I risked telling her how frustratingly terrible it had been. Her response was to be devastated by the news. She said she was really hoping this time to hear the transition had gone well, that there was growth and maturity and blah, blah, blah. And I resisted my best cynical response. "Well, you know, I was actually wishing for better news myself." Somehow, strangely, I ended up needing to comfort and reassure her regarding this hard-to-hear news. And I remember thinking, what is wrong with this picture? This, my friends, is not listening. Another time, I was deeply moved when I looked up into my friend's face as I talked about a particularly painful parenting struggle and saw tears in her eyes. She didn't have any words and she didn't need any. Her deep care came through loud and clear. We could use a break. Find out what we really need a night out, or maybe a night in when someone bravely invites our kid over for an evening out of playing games or watching a movie or going mini golfing or whatever so that we can be at our house in peace and quiet. If you have a child the same age or a bit older than ours, this is your opportunity to teach them to be inclusive and gracious and welcoming and kind and accepting of those who aren't just like us. It seems that we're always inviting someone to our house to give our child the opportunity to interact. It would mean a lot if occasionally someone would invite our child over. We need the option of flexibility. We aren't trying to throw a monkey wrench into other people's long-range plans. We just can't always be counted on to show up. Remember? We'll have to see how it's going. I've been grateful for the times people made plans and included us with these words. "You're welcome to come if it works out." It takes a certain amount of emotional reserve for me to agree to just about any extra activity, and I don't always predict those reserves correctly ahead of time. Recently, I had to bow out of something I had earlier agreed to do, and I was deeply moved by the graciousness of the people who stepped in to fill that role. I felt no judgment, only grace. We desperately need your prayers. Look us in the eye and say, "How can I pray for you this week?" Or, "I'm praying for you," and then by all means pray. And tell us you're praying. Ask us how it's going, only if you really want to know. And when you hear nothing out of us for days or weeks, don't stop praying, because we probably especially need it then, but we're too stressed or broken, exhausted or busy to call. Some days we barely come up for air. Life can be a blur of serious emotional meltdowns coupled with counseling appointments, doctor visits, med checks, speech therapy appointments, and who knows what else, depending on our child's particular needs. Part of the exhaustion of our lives is realizing that our parenting challenges are not a passing season. We are very aware that our kids aren't just going through a stage. This is their life, and by extension, it is our life too. Sometimes we feel like our entire life is now and forever wrapped up in the intensity of this one diagnosis. So when someone takes time to listen or offer encouragement, when someone delivers a meal just because or listens and then says, "I had no idea, I'll be praying," we draw strength from that interaction. Our hearts are healed a little bit in the broken, bruised places with the kindly administration of grace. We know we're high maintenance friends. So when someone gently offers the gift of true friendship, even as we slog along beneath the backpack, it does seem as though they are strengthening us for this monumental task and reminding us that we are not alone. They are living out their obedience to these words from Galatians 6:2. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And I, for one, am deeply grateful every time it happens.